Welcome to Cross Section, conversations at the intersection of faith, news, and culture.
Well, hello, and welcome back to Cross Section, where we will again be talking about the week's big news stories. I am joined by our regulars, Alicia and Danny.
Hello.
Welcome to you both. Alicia is honestly here.
She's just been unusually quiet. I am ready for the conversation.
Well, we want to welcome our listeners. We want to welcome in particular Kate, who got in touch to say, "You guys are absolute class." My favourite line, although she seems to be a big Alicia fan.
Well, I appreciate your encouragement, Kate. I don't want to turn this into a fangirl moment. So next, moving on.
And to our fans as well, we want to say it's Danny's birthday, a big birthday. Well done, Danny. Congratulations. To the big 4-0.
Yes. We did consider doing a poll for listeners to try and guess my age, but Peter decided just to
reveal it. So we're recording on Danny's birthday. This is going to go out, though, on International Women's Day. And so to mark that one, our first story, we're going to look at the woman of the moment, or a woman of the moment. And that is Ray, who was incredibly successful at the Brit Awards earlier this week. I'm going to confess that my knowledge of Ray is somewhat limited. I've been catching up. So Alicia, what do we know about Ray and why is she an interesting character?
Yeah, so for our listeners, I would describe Ray as the UK artist and version of Taylor Swift, in the sense that she's had a very turbulent relationship with the music industry, in that she had been signed, I think it was to Polydor, for several years, writing and producing for an album, and they kept saying that she was not ready to release an album. So she spent many years trying to come out of that and is now an independent artist. And at the Brit Awards, she was nominated for 7 categories, won 6, and took to the stage to thank her grandmother, who'd been praying for her throughout the years of struggle, and with her music career and her own personal challenges she faced, and also spoke about how her faith or Christianity was integral to her learning and being interested in music. So she grew up in the church, that's why she's a woman of the moment.
Well, just a little fact check there on her nomination. She was nominated 7 times, but in fact she won every category she could be nominated, because she was nominated twice for Song of the Year. So actually it's an unprecedented performance at the Brits.
Danny, it's always good to have you fact-checking in on the details on this.
I was, when Alicia said that she was the UK version of Taylor Swift, my hopes were raised that I might have discovered a new artist, because my knowledge of Ray was minimal. So I did download her
just
album.
Just to remind our listeners that Danny is a total devoted Swiftie.
Yes. Well, no, I'm a big fan. I would say that on the scale of Swifties, there's an awful lot more. You can go, I am looking forward to her new album, though. I did download and listen to it, and I'm not sure it's quite my thing.
Well, there's the musical critique. So the story, there's a couple of interesting aspects of the story. Is the pushback on the record label, as you were saying, and then the faith background. I mean, she grew up singing in church, I think, from some of the things that I've read. That's often where...
Yeah, for sure. Gospel music, raised in the church. And I think the story for me, similarly to Danny, I don't listen to Ray much, but I think that story of perseverance in prayer, that her grandmother was involved in her life, the fact that the role of the church, while she admits in elsewhere in different interviews that she left faith, played an integral role in her discovering her artistry and somewhat her purpose and kind of work vocation in life. And yeah, just the importance and the encouragement to us all that what we sow in younger generations' lives proves fruitful in many years later. And for her to bring up her grandmother and honour her publicly before the music industry and the world as playing an integral part to her career is just testament to that.
Yeah, and there's obviously one of her songs she sings. You start to wonder why I'm a Christian. Without the Lord, I'd take my life. For all the times I've been a victim, oh, no weapon formed against me shall ever prosper. So clearly there's a faith influence there. It's clearly part of her experience and her songwriting, which adds another level of interest.
Yeah, and there's a pretty striking kind of honesty and rawness to some of her material, as you said. She touches on and she's spoken about and sung about some of the traumatic incidents in her lives and the impact those have had upon her in terms of both sexual assault and eating disorders and a number of things I've covered. So we'll link to an article where you can read a little bit more about Ray and find out more about both the influence of faith on her life and her singing career. And with that, we are going to switch then across to the second of our stories this week. And that is around the extremism legislation that's being proposed, or a definition that is being talked about. And the reason we're interested in that is, again, that basically, Danny, it turns out you're an extremist, probably.
Possibly. I'm possibly an extremist. Possibly. And
not simply for your devotion to Taylor Swift, but actually for something, a whole series of pretty mainstream Christian beliefs are potentially going to be caught up in this definition.
This is something that has yo-yoed in and out of political discussion over the last decade or so, how extremism is defined and what the government do with that and the potential risks of that. So the Evangelical Alliance did some polling with other organisations back in 2017, and we were trying to explore, how do you define extremism? What do people think is extremism? We asked if different historical figures could be considered as extreme. 28% said Jesus would be extreme, 25% said Martin Luther King would be considered extreme, 20% Gandhi. So the idea is that a lot of people could be thought of as extreme. And then other views and opinions might be considered extreme and classed as extreme by people. And then the pushback that we made then and we will make again to the government as they seek to define extremism is that what is criminalised needs to be around violence and criminal action, not just views that people disagree with, even if they disagree with those views very strongly.
Yeah, so the Times had a story about this where, in an effort to tackle growing Islamic and far-right extremism, ministers are looking to update the definition on what is extremism. And but the article leads to say, look, it could inadvertently penalise groups who oppose gay marriage, abortion or new transgender rights. And so a number of different categories. So actually, it could be feminists, Christians, and a whole variety of people caught up in these new definitions. And that just shows, I think, some of the challenges going on. Miriam Cates commented and said, this is a slippery slope to the abolition of fundamental freedoms and a path to authoritarianism. So a Tory MP criticising her own party for the way they're going on this. Alicia, what's the kind of vibe around Parliament on this and our response around some of this?
Well, I think that the topic of extremism is a continuation from our podcast conversation last week following the aftermath of the Israel-Gaza ceasefire vote. I think it is an issue that is going to divide the Conservative Party in terms of the direction of travel. And so it will be interesting to see how Michael Gove proceeds and moves forward. An area where I am in agreement with the idea of tackling the problem that we're finding ourselves in society. In the last year, we've had what was the Bloom Report and his kind of proposals to government in how to engage well and constructively with faith communities. And one of his chapters looked on faith-based extremism. And he was saying, or reported back a year ago to the government, about the need to make a distinction in extreme Islamic activity and kind of speech within the public discourse and separating that from Islam. And then he also went on to talk about the rise of Hindu nationalism within the UK, white supremacy in the UK, as well as other faith communities of extreme elements within those faith groups. So the government do need to tackle disunity within communities. I guess where my concerns are is that this isn't the safest place for government in terms of faith literacy, faith understanding, ethnicity. I'm concerned that the policy direction going forward could be too far, as Danny mentioned, that actually speech, proclamation of the gospel, sharing different point of view on identity that's shared in a public space could come under the new definition of extremism. So, yeah.
And one of the other problems or the things that has been criticised in how the government approached this is that they're not really naming the real problem. And we saw this when the government previously tried to tackle illegal schools, broad, wide-ranging policy approaches, rather than focusing on where the real problem was. And there's an editorial in the Telegraph from earlier this week that say that the government, rather than, they need to be very careful as to how extremism is defined, and instead they should address the danger of Islamism head on. And this all comes up. Rishi Sunak stood in front of Downing Street after George Galloway had won the Rochdale by-election, and some of the fears in communities around Islamist violence and extremism. And the challenge then is, how can the government tackle problems that might have quite particular origins, but also not do so in a way that stigmatises a particular faith community?
Yeah, and a lot of this goes to the undermining of British values as one of the lines being used, but there are no agreed set of British values. This is the core. So much of the values that we have historically held were shaped by Christianity. There's been a large cultural rejection of those Christian values, but there's been no agreement as to what replaces them. And so now we have this very vague idea of undermining British values without anybody. We don't have a written constitution. There's nowhere to point to and say those are our agreed sets of values. And so it becomes highly subjective. We've seen something similar in Ireland in recent months around hate speech legislation there. And again, they won't define what the hate speech is. It's very subjective, and judges will decide when it comes before them whether the thing is hate speech or not. And you can't write legislation in that way. That's not acceptable, because we don't know we've broken the law until somebody later decides that what we have said or written is a breach. And I think this does go to that underpinning question. If you want to reject Christianity and want to reject those set of values, our culture is struggling to see and unite on a different set of values of which we're going to agree to live our lives around. And it has serious ramifications on free speech. And so I definitely am concerned about the direction of travel we have going on here. Where is this realistically as a piece of proposal and legislation? Because it's been around, as you say, for some time. Variations on this keep coming back.
So the expectation is that Michael Gove, part of the cabinet, is expected to announce plans next week. So very soon, about what this would look like. There have been a few things in the press this week about how they would do that or what they would do. Gove is expected to announce that a new government unit for combating extremism will assess whether individuals or groups have breached the new definition. All of this sounds fascinating and interesting. I'm just not sure they're going to be able to do it, because these issues have come up time and time again, and the government feel like actually they need to respond to another situation by being seen to do something, and yet all the same problems are still there, all the challenges of definitions and applications. So I'm expecting some more announcements, and then I'm expecting them to put things to consultation and discover that things are more complicated than they thought.
Well, because some of the examples used in these articles are around gender-critical views. One group viewed those as extreme, and another group view essentially the pro-trans movement and the affirmation of children as an extreme. And I would be in the second category, and that's extreme. That should be banned. Or an abortion, similarly, we've got legislation coming up and amendments being attached to the criminal justice bill in the next week or two. Full decriminalisation up to birth. In my view, that's an extreme position. But others would view my ardent pro-life views as extreme. How do we... I mean, it's just so subjective, it seems.
Well, I think either it's going to end up tackling free speech and restricting legitimate views that people might disagree with, or it's going to be a pointless piece of legislation and programme that, for all of the rhetoric around it, all it does is address things that are already criminal and can already be dealt with through the existing law.
I think in everything that we're saying for our listeners, and we're not wanting to stoke fear, just bringing to your attention what is being discussed within politics and particularly within the government at this moment in time. But I would say, as individual Christians in your local context, to continue to be faithful witnesses to who the person of Jesus is and his teachings, and continue to demonstrate his love, his compassion and his care and his truth to a culture that is saying that actually we can do life apart from the Lord.
Excellent stuff. And we have a Speak Up resource that you'll find on our website. We always like to emphasize to people, despite what you read and some of the cases that do come up in the news, the reality is we have incredible freedoms to share our faith in the workplace, in the home, on our streets. The reality is, for most people, we aren't using them to anywhere near the extent that we should be. And one of the biggest issues we have is we need to be much more confident in sharing our faith and worry less perhaps about some of the risks. So do check out Speak Up on our website. We work with Lawyers Christian Fellowship to remind people of the freedoms that we have. We do want to protect them. We do want to be alert to that. But want to remind people of that. You are listening to Cross Section, as you undoubtedly know, where we look at the intersection of faith and culture and some of the big news stories. Some of you might be wondering, are they about to mention the budget? We are in a moment, and Danny will be bringing his expertise to that. But we want to thank you for listening. If you are enjoying the show, please do share, like, review, let other folks know. And if you're enjoying what we do here, the work of the Evangelical Alliance is based on our membership, and you can become a member of EA for as little as £3 a month. You go to the website and you click to sign up and be a member. And we'd love to send you the Being Human book, and we'd love to have your support. So when the guys go into Parliament, be it in Westminster or around the nations, we can say we are representing the views of tens of thousands of members and thousands of church members in our conversations. Danny, I've obviously revealed our last story. The budget, a big story this week, or was it a damp squib?
It was I would say, a medium-sized story. So a lot of the discussion about the budget was whether it was really the starting gun for the general election. And ahead of this podcast recording, we had a lively conversation as to what I had predicted in a previous episode.
And it turns out
I did think that on balance, a May election was more likely than an autumn election. I actually don't think that and haven't thought that for a while, but I seem to change my mind most weeks as to when it's most likely to come. I think I also underestimated what I think the scale and size of a Labour Party victory will be. But again, things might change, so we'll have to see. But anyway, that's my confession.
Excellent.
To the budget. The headline of the budget is that they've reduced national insurance by 2%, but what's interesting for me is who is this targeted at? A number of the measures in this budget seem to be targeted at what has previously been described as the squeezed middle, people who have moderate, medium to medium high incomes, but feel the pressure on their finances because of mortgage payments, energy costs, but actually statistically are probably better than average. So quite a lot of these measures benefit them more than they benefit people who are on lower incomes. So in particular, the national insurance cut, changes to the child benefit taper, so people will be able to earn more before they have to start paying child benefit back. There are some measures that I know Christians Against Poverty were very pleased about in terms of removing the fee for debt relief orders and a few other measures around that. But overall, it was a fairly unexciting budget. The general view was that this wasn't a budget that was about to kickstart an election campaign. And Jeremy Hunt said on the radio the day after the budget that his working assumption was the election would be in the autumn, but that was a decision above his pay grade.
Well, excellent. Danny did, I think, miss there was a very specific piece of funding for Corian, my hometown, or close to my hometown. So the budget, $20 million for regeneration for Corian in Londonderry, which I think was a very high-level detail that you skipped past. So there are some very specific measures. I'll just mention that for the three listeners who come from my hometown. Alicia, further thoughts on the budget?
I think my main thing this morning is, will it make a difference to people's lives who are waking up this morning desperate about where the next work opportunity is going to come, access to public services that deal with either systemic health issues, whether that's drug and alcohol addiction, homelessness, the NHS, where their next meal, how they're going to pay for that. I think that part of society doesn't benefit from this budget. And in fact, this afternoon, I'm looking forward to following up with Christians Against Poverty and their event in Westminster. They're pushed out report that comes today following the budget that looks at the living standards across the UK, poverty and debt. So for me, I'm a little bit disappointed for those who are the least in our society. But equally, is it a May election or not? If you speak to those within the Labour ranks, they do think that this is gearing up to a pre-election budget and it's likely to be a May election. I don't know if that's them looking for the headlines and looking to lead and take the charge in that sense. But there's a lot of rumour amongst Labour Party members and MPs that it could be gearing up for a May election.
Do you think it's a May election?
I think the Lord is sovereign. I trust his leadership in that. If it's May or it's autumn, I am ready to serve.
There you go, Danny. That's how you're supposed to answer that question.
Yes. Just one other thing. Can we talk about fiscal drag?
Oh, Danny. Listeners, please stick with us. Danny, we'll make this interesting.
Not about drag in other contexts.
Thanks for clarifying.
Yes, fiscal drag. So one of the things that this government have done in recent years is freeze the threshold where people start paying tax and also then move from the standard rate of tax into the higher rate of tax. The coalition government between 2010-2015 increased the personal allowance to a reasonably high level so that people didn't start paying tax until around 12,000. It's now about 12,500 pounds a year. But that's now been frozen, and all the projections in this budget are based on that being frozen until 2029. The true benefit of that to the government and cost to people is over £40 billion. The total cost to the government and benefit to people of the national insurance changes both last year and this year is about £20 billion. So while the government are making a big deal of the fact that they're reducing national insurance and putting money back in the hands of people, actually, what they've done by freezing those thresholds is take more than they're giving back. And the net benefit is for people who are on the higher end of income under £50,000. Those are the people who do best off out of this budget. People who are earning £15,000 to £25,000 do better off on the government's terms because national insurance has gone down, but worse off because the starting rate has not increased.
Okay, so just so I'm clear, you get the headline appears to be most those who are working are getting their 450 quid back a year, if you like, or less in national insurance. So that sounds like the win, but actually by holding these thresholds down over time, which don't get the same headline, the government is clawing more than that back and we're all going to be worse off.
And because, not all of us, it does depend.
Well,
because
the large majority in the middle, possibly, the working middle, if you like.
Because more people will start paying tax and more people will be paying more tax as their pay increases, yes, their overall take-home pay adjusted for inflation will be less.
It does seem to be masking some pain. We had an all-staff gathering yesterday. We had some of our staff in Birmingham. We were just talking about the 21% rate increase going to happen in Birmingham because it's basically bust as a council, as the largest council in Europe, I think it is.
Exactly.
And so you're going to pay 21% more in rates and get basically half the services in every area within Birmingham. There'll be one library left, things like this. Nottingham has done something similar. It's essentially very close to being bust. One of our staff from there was saying a very similar kind of trajectory there. So you've got this, the budget appears like a relatively normal budget. And for a lot of people, things are sort of okay-ish, but behind the scenes, it's not far beneath. There is real crisis across almost every sector.
Local authority funding is a real problem. About 10 years ago, I saw something called the Graph of Doom, which was a projection by Barnet Council, where the income from council taxes would barely increase over years, but the cost to them of providing the statutory services, those services they legally have to provide, a lot of adult and child social care, would increase to the extent that actually that's all they can afford to do. So every discretionary service, everything that they may want to do, they can't afford to do. And that's the problem all local authorities are facing. And the crisis is hitting some sooner than others.
But then, rather than being a kind of election budget, because it didn't really feel like it gave enough headlines for that kind of win, it feels like you're just storing up problems for whoever's next, which frankly they know is not going to be them, barring some absolute miracle. And the polling is getting progressively worse for the Conservatives and largely better for Labour. And this budget appears like we'll just push everything back for 6 to 8 months because somebody else is going to have to deal with the pain. I mean, we're in real trouble here, Lizzie, aren't we, as a nation financially? To our financial expert.
Our listeners don't need me to say yes. I think they already feel it and are aware of that post-pandemic. We are in a state of freefall, it feels, both economically and in terms of the state of our public services. And I think what the budget, reflecting on it, shows for me is that there's a conversation that the government wants to have at a national level, and then there's a disparity and a difference in reality at grassroots level, which is where the church voice needs to be heard. It's where it needs to be most engaged, not only in serving the needs of those on the margins of society and in poverty, but talking to local council leaders about what they're doing to alleviate, bring good services, steward finance as well, and somewhat challenge the rate of high council tax that's going forward with little service and care for those who highly depend upon them.
So there's massive opportunities for church in many ways to bridge the gap, but the reality is a lot of churches are struggling financially and in terms of numbers and people, particularly in volunteering, we know from other work that we've been doing. So while there is this gap, the church is not able to bridge all of it. So we want to be absolutely encouraging people. CAP, Christians Against Poverty and the Debt Centres, are an amazing way to do that in terms of food banks, but these are stop gaps and it's not possible for the church to bridge all that's going on, while recognising there are big opportunities in this moment just because of the stretch that is going on everywhere. We're all feeling it in various ways at this moment, in this chaotic and contested moment. We want to thank you for joining with us and listening along. Hopefully you found something of interest across our three fairly diverse stories, reflecting back on Ray and as we looked at International Women's Day not maybe in detail, but in terms of a female singer who's overcome a significant adversity in her life and has talked about the influence of faith on her life, if we put it that way. It's a complex relationship for her, for sure. And then the potential changes to the extremism legislation. And there's always things in the background that we're always wanting to lean into, both in terms of our advocacy team and the policy right down in Westminster, but also to be talking about and making sure we're discussing. And the budget is, a damp squib is going to be our overall vote, perhaps, and not particularly exciting in terms of the election, although Alicia's hearing rumours maybe from the Labour front benches that it might move the dial. But perhaps most importantly today, what we've heard is a confession from Danny. Though he may have been too soon. Maybe he's too early. We'll have to see. Zana might help us find that clip. We might have to replay that once we're clear there's no May election. But thank you again for joining us. As always, we're trying to wrestle with these conversations and see where the place of faith is in this. We remain deeply passionate about sharing Jesus every opportunity and about helping the church to navigate what's going on in the cultural moment that we find ourselves in. We value our prayers for the teams in Westminster, in the Senate, in the Stormont Assembly, and up in Edinburgh and in the Parliament there, the name of which I now completely blank and forget.
Holyrood.
I've been lots of times. I couldn't for life. So we have teams engaging in legislation and policy across all of those spaces, and we're often picking up stories from right across the nation. Thank you for joining us. Have a wonderful week ahead and be blessed.
Hi, it's Peter here. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Cross Section. If you liked it, can I encourage you to click subscribe, review the podcast, share the episode on social media, or tell your friends so that they can enjoy it too. And don't forget, you can email us at cross.section@eauk.org. See you next time.